The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Derek Frost from North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading Triangle Business Journal. Today's program is underwritten by Highwoods Properties with its headquarters in Raleigh, North Carolina. Highwoods, a real estate investment trust, is committed to making our communities better places to live and work. Highwoods can be reached at 866-449-6637. And we start on the front page with the cover story headline of the Triangle Business Journal. Data Center Dilemma, Economic Boon or Missed Opportunity. And the article begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with a second headline. Across NC, communities grapple with whether data centers make sense. Big tech, big decisions. And this is written by Ben Tobin and Lauren Onisorge. The latest chapter in North Carolina's data center gambit lies in a town with less than 11,000 residents. Promises of big money and big jobs came to the town of Tarboro with a $6.4 billion 500-job data center project on the table. The town's median income of under $50,000 is well below the state's average. It had more residents in 1990 than it does today. And applicant Energy Storage Solutions LLC said the project could change the trajectory of the Edgecombe County town. But on September 9, the Tarboro Town Council took a rare move not seen yet in the state. It rejected a special use permit application for the project, preventing it from moving forward. A chorus of residents worried about noise, electricity, and water usage erupted in thunderous applause late in the night after town council members turned the project away. I believe this presents serious risks for our town, risks that I cannot support due to the nature of its uncertainty, Tarboro Mayor Tate Mayo said at the beginning of the meeting. And Tarboro isn't the only North Carolina town weighing the benefits and risks of data centers as demands for power for artificial intelligence rise. Amazon announced in June a $10 billion investment to build a data center campus in Richmond County, roughly 95 miles southeast of Raleigh, making it the largest single capital project in the state's history. But for every proposed project comes vocal opposition from residents who are becoming increasingly organized. The state has a decision to make. Should it go all in on the AI future with data centers, or would that be folding too soon on the manufacturing dreams that once dominated its economic development playbook? On one side, data centers promise long-term infrastructure and a foothold in the AI revolution, although the jobs created are relatively small. On the other, manufacturing projects could offer thousands of jobs and tangible products rolling off the line. There's only so much land, there's only so many shovel-ready industrial sites that have 500 megawatts of capacity or more, said Chris Chung, CEO of the Economic Development Partnership of North Carolina. He notes land availability was a problem even before the latest boom. More of these data centers being planned out put further pressure on that finite supply of shovel-ready sites that have the infrastructure, he said. 20 colossal buildings, each stretching longer than 3 football fields, are set to rise in Richmond County at Amazon's facility. It's a significant moment for the county with a population of roughly 42,000 and a poverty rate of around 25%, according to U.S. Census numbers. But the buildings won't house assembly lines. Instead, they'll be data centers powering the invisible engine behind Amazon's artificial intelligence infrastructure. And Amazon isn't the only global firm racing to put data centers in the state. Nowhere is that competition more evident than the Person County mega site near Roxboro. Once hailed as the best site in the United States to put a chip manufacturing facility, it attracted interest from global foundries, Samsung, and even Elon Musk's Tesla. The state pulled out all the stops for Project Panther, aka Tesla, more than 5 years ago, envisioning Cybertrucks and Model Ys built in North Carolina. But the dream fizzled when Tesla picked Texas instead. Instead of holding out for the next Tesla, Person County sold the site to Microsoft last year for $27 million. Yet the data center boom is already creating winners in the Triangle. Triangle firms such as Hitachi Energy and DJ Matrix of Raleigh are expanding thanks to demand for energy systems and performance tech. And communities, too, are feeling the effects. Apple, for example, is the largest taxpayer in Catawba County in the western part of the state. Most people may not realize this, but the Carolinas have been a pretty good data center market probably for the last 10 years, starting down in the Kings Mountain area. said Dustin Smith, a vice president and mission critical division manager for Brasfield and Gorey, an Alabama construction firm that has been involved in multiple data center projects and has a presence in Raleigh. It has steadily grown, and the demand in the market is just shifting more that way, he says. Innovation, but at what cost? North Carolina's foray into data center technology began in 2007 when Google took a chance on Lenore in Caldwell County. Its first data center opened in 2008, kickstarting a wave of investment in western North Carolina. To date, Google has invested more than $1.2 billion, according to the company, generating $13.1 billion in economic activity as of last year. Apple came on board in 2009 and as of earlier this year has invested more than $4 billion in Catawba County. In 2010, Meta broke ground on its data center campus in Forest City in Rutherford County, a $750 million investment that today spans 1.3 million square feet. That complex, which supports more than 275 jobs, resulted in $5.9 million in direct funding to area schools and nonprofits. Just last year, Meta supported Isothermal Community College's new Extended Reality and Artificial Intelligence Lab, an initiative expected to beef up the tech talent pool in both Polk and Rutherford counties. Microsoft in 2022 announced plans to build four data centers in Catawba County, a $1 billion project. Scott Millar, Economic Development Director for Catawba County, said it's a balancing act. Yes, it is important to create higher wage, higher skilled jobs, but it's also important to pay the bills, he said. And of course, the income stream from data centers are substantial and the cost to the local governments are pretty low. Cities don't have to pay for social services to support computers, after all, and data centers typically don't compete with existing employers for talent, a common criticism of economic development in the state, and they typically don't require massive incentives, as often power availability is what attracts the projects. In the case of Catawba County, both Apple and Microsoft get refunds of 50% of their county taxes, as well as 85% of their personal property taxes. While only Apple has advanced to the point of securing those refunds, it has been a net positive as the town of Maiden has lowered its taxes from 40 cents to 38 cents and still has managed to build new fire stations, a town hall, a policy headquarters, that may be police headquarters, and a community center, Millar said. Everybody that lives in the town of Maiden benefits, he said. Apple has created 400 jobs in the county, including contractors, and expectations are that Microsoft, currently grading its sites, will be an equally good partner. And that's how he sees data centers in his region, as partners and not competition for resources. Apple, he said, recycles every gallon of water 37 times before it leaves their property. You can't just paint all data centers with the same brush, he said. But even Millar wants a diverse portfolio. Catawba County, like the Triangle, is pushing for biotech, high-tech manufacturing. It wants to create jobs, and it will be choosy when it comes to the next big tech data center prospect, he said. Like the rest of the state, western North Carolina faces a defining choice: double down on data centers or hold out for the Teslas of the world. And if the state makes the wrong call, the cost won't just be measured in dollars. It'll be measured in missed opportunities. Opposition and obstacles. When Carrie Pennell saw a yellow rezoning sign in October on a piece of property less than a mile from her house in Mooresville, a growing town north of Charlotte, she scrambled to figure out what was going on. It turns out Tract, a data center land acquisition and development company based out of Colorado, had eyed the 400-acre property between Patterson Farm and Rustic Roads for a $30 billion data center project. The land is owned by the widow of NASCAR's Dale Earnhardt. In August, Tract withdrew its plans following a major opposition campaign led by Pennell and others. They were shocked that we were able to rally so fast, Pennell said. We were told by everybody, this is a done deal. You guys are wasting your time. Pennell said her two objectives were to buy time and find facts to inform residents of the town. The Facebook page, No to Rezoning, No to Mooresville NC Tech Park, and an accompanying website have held hundreds of posts, facts, and figures and information on how to contact elected representations. What happened in Mooresville is a microcosm of a not-in-my-backyard movement nationwide in response to data centers. The primary concerns raised by the group were elevated noise levels potentially created by the project, potentially higher electrical utility rates, and unclear communication on the benefits of the project. Recent examples of data center opposition nationwide include the Monroe County Board of Commissioners in Georgia unanimously rejected a proposal for a 900-acre data center project on August 5, following vociferous opposition from local residents. The Tucson City Council in Arizona unanimously rejected a proposal for a large data center on August 7, following opposition from local residents. The St. Charles City Council in Missouri unanimously passed a resolution on August 22 for a one-year moratorium on data center construction, the first municipality to do so in the nation. And Tarboro, the small town in eastern North Carolina, has proven to be the next case study in data center opposition. Over two meetings, many residents spoke against the $6.4 billion data center project proposed for more than 50 acres on the south side of Anaconda Road between McNair Road and Western Boulevard. Gas supply in North Carolina is incredibly uncertain, and so the viability of this project to secure enough gas capacity to meet their needs to run a data center 100% of the time, 24/7, 365 days a year, is called into question. Janelle Wilson, a resident of Tarboro and manager at the Rocky Mountain Institute, who specializes in electric utility regulation and policy, said September 8. A petition titled Stop Tarboro Council from Allowing Massive Data Center collected close to 800 signatures on change.org and said the project poses significant risks that outweigh any potential benefits. Ultimately, town council members decided that the risks of the project outweighed the rewards. All but one member voted against it. Utility consumption. Data centers require massive amounts of two utilities, electricity and water. Electricity helps ensure all the servers and generators for any particular data center can stay running at all times, while water is used for liquid cooling to lower the temperature of the servers. For context, on the electricity front, data center projects that have demands of 50 megawatts are roughly comparable to 37,000 homes in terms of energy that is consumed. And the average hyperscale data center, like new ones being built by global tech giants, consumes 550,000 gallons of water per day, or the amount of water consumed daily by roughly 1,833 households combined. For comparison, an Olympic-sized swimming pool has roughly 660,000 gallons of water. Over 100 prospective projects with 50 megawatts or greater are currently looking at North Carolina, says Kendall Bowman, president of Duke Energy's utility operations in North Carolina. Of those, roughly 50% are data or AI driven. As part of this anticipated increase in demand for electricity, Duke Energy, just like other utilities across the region, have had to be careful in their projections, known as load forecasts, which include what rate payers can expect to pay. Critics of data centers have said that there's an upward bias in these load forecasts. In other words, some fear that utilities are overestimating future demand and that ratepayers will ultimately get stuck with the bill. What typically happens is all the ratepayers in the service territory are paying for new generation and new transmission through their rates, said Kathy Kunkel, an energy consultant with the Institute for Energy Economics and Financial Analysis, a nonprofit that promotes the transition to clean energy. So if you build all this generation on the expectation a whole bunch of new sales, and then not all that materializes, then everyone else is stuck paying for this new generation that wasn't actually fully needed. That concern is shared by Mary McLean Asbill, director of North Carolina offices for the Southern Environmental Law Center, who said that she fears many data centers are being proposed as gambling posture. I worry companies, for example, propose 10 different data centers in various areas in the hopes that 7 will get built, Asbill said. But if the energy source for those data centers all begin getting built, we're going to have too many pipelines that are very destructive to the environment and the communities around them. Bowman said that Duke Energy isn't including every potential prospective company into its load forecasting. Rather, she says that Duke Energy is only forecasting demand based off companies who have signed a letter agreement or intend to come. Overall, if a customer is using more energy, they are going to pay a higher bill, Bowman said. Customers tend to pay the rate for what it costs us to serve them, she said. The infrastructure build-out for large customers is going to obviously be a lot more than for residential customers, so they're going to pay a bigger rate for that infrastructure. They're also going to consume a lot of energy, so they're going to pay for that. Bowman adds that Duke Energy is building in some protections, including credit security requirements, upfront payments, and termination penalties for larger customers to ensure that ratepayers aren't footing the bill. Smith with Brasfield and Gorey said, "We can't shy away from the fact that these data centers use a lot of power. But the technology is changing so fast, what may take a lot of water today will not take that same level in the future." FlexGen CEO Kelsey Pegler, whose company builds battery systems to stabilize energy demand, said the real issue is the four-hour window from 3 to 7 p.m. when the grid is most stressed. "One of the newest data centers I was in, it's a 200,000-square-foot facility, but only 10% is populated," Pegler said. "They don't have enough power to supply it." The AI race, he argues, won't be won by the smartest algorithms. It'll be won by whoever can deliver the most power. The investment debate. For Marty Butler, Amazon placing a $10 billion data center campus in Richmond County will be as transformational as the Seaboard Airline Railroad coming to the county and establishing a division office over 100 years ago. Butler, the economic development director for Richmond County, had been talking with Amazon for years before the Seattle-based tech giant made its announcement in June, promising 500 jobs along the way. And she has big dreams for what the county can become thanks to Amazon. "I really think this will change the dynamic here," Butler said. "This will bring in more residents, increase people's quality of life. We will have an increase in hotels. It will do a lot of things for our citizens and give them additional opportunities for employment and for growth." Butler said she can't speak to the electricity side of things, but as far as water, "We have more than enough capacity to supply them with the water they need, so that will not affect any of our local residents or water users." Yet not everyone is bullish on data centers. In North Carolina's fast-growing Brunswick County, there are two megasites that would certainly have the land available for a large-scale data center. But Bill Early, executive director of the Public-Private Economic Partnership, Brunswick Business and Industry Development, said there are better uses for those megasites. "Overall, I'm not really opposed to data centers, but I think you have to look at each one on a case-by-case basis," Early said. "Data centers typically create very large capital investments, which are always nice to have, but very few jobs. Our mission is to bring in capital investment, but also to create jobs to improve the quality of life for our local residents." And there's also a shorter second story with this cover story in a section called "What's Inside a Data Center." This is written by Ben Tobin. As AI arrives, data centers require rising levels of space, energy. Data centers have been around for decades, but what once might have fit into a storage closet now often spans the length of several football fields. For such a nascent yet rapidly evolving industry, the question of what exactly is inside a large-scale data center can vary. Kendall Bowman, state president for North Carolina for Duke Energy, put it simply, "Think of processing units, and it is racks and racks and racks of those central processing units that are in the data centers. And if you think about artificial intelligence, multiply that by 10 in terms of usage," Bowman said. "I will say the industry is getting more and more energy efficient, but the need for energy usage is continuing to get bigger because they're doing more things with artificial intelligence." The proliferation of these structures and all their component parts have created major business opportunities for construction companies with presences in the Triangle. For example, DPR Construction, which has a regional research and development headquarters at Research Triangle Park, is consistently ranked by various publications as one of the biggest data center general contractors in the United States. Almost one-third of DPR's overall company revenue for 2024 can be attributed to mission-critical or data center work, according to the company's website. Alan Maxwell, a project executive with DPR based in the Triangle, said that DPR tries to differentiate ourselves through doing more technical tech projects, so we have a really strong bench of quality builders. The company has been in the space for a long time. DPR helped construct two 370,000-square-foot data centers for Facebook, now Meta, that opened in 2012. DPR also has several active projects with Meta, as well as several with other major companies. The scale of these projects is getting larger and larger, Maxwell said. Companies aren't building small standalone data centers anymore. They're like mega campuses, and speed is the most critical part of these projects. These companies wanted this stuff yesterday. Maxwell said data centers have an inner and outer layer. In the inner layer, companies have server racks that are connected to mechanical systems, which are usually outside or on top of the building. The big thing about data centers is how can you control the heat, he said, because obviously these servers create a lot of heat, so the overall structure is not going to be the most sexiest thing you've ever seen, but it's all about controlling temperature, and you do that through those mechanical and plumbing and electrical systems. With AI, server racks are becoming more dense, and the denser the rack, the more heat that it offloads, and so your systems have to be that much more efficient. At a high level, Maxwell says the major components of data centers boil down to three main systems: cooling systems to keep servers from overheating, transformers to bring high voltage power from transmission lines into the facility, and backup generators to keep everything running if the grid fails. Dustin Smith, vice president and mission critical division manager for Brasfield & Gorrie, said of data centers, "Picture a large open space full of computer racks and servers that produce, generate, and store data. Brasfield & Gorrie, out of Alabama, has completed more than 10 data center projects in North Carolina during the past 20 years. With more than 400 megawatts of data center construction planned in the future for the state, the company's projected revenue in its mission-critical sector for 2025 is roughly $2 billion. Think about your old server closet in any typical office space, Smith said. Picture that with tens of thousands of servers stacked and lined end to end. You'll see a lot of technical equipment, that infrastructure that supports those servers and racks, and then you'll see a lot of large backup equipment to support that in terms of generators and things of that nature. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the top news stories. The first one's written by Kate Tracy. 321 Coffee to triple its roasting capacity. Raleigh company hires people with intellectual developmental disabilities. 321 Coffee is readying for another jolt of growth. The coffee company, with multiple locations across the Triangle, is moving to a larger roasting facility that co-founder and CEO Lindsay Reeg, W-R-E-G-E, said will triple the company's weekly roasting capacity. The move, which Reeg is planning to make as soon as this month, is necessary as 321 Coffee ramps up its wholesale production. Already, 321 Coffee is in 500 Whole Foods and Food Lion stores, and more retailers are on the immediate horizon. The new roasting facility will total approximately 4,500 square feet in Raleigh's Midtown, around double the size of its current facility in South Raleigh. It ended up being a great deal that had a great location, Reeg said. She declined to provide the specific location for the new facility ahead of the move. More roasting capacity also means more opportunities to grow 321 Coffee's employee roster of individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities. 5 employees currently make up the roasting team, but 321 Coffee will give the option for 4 current baristas to make the switch to roasting. As of earlier this year, the company had 60 employees and a wait list of 500 people. 321 Coffee's roasting operation had humble beginnings in 2020, starting with one roaster that processed only 2 pounds of coffee at a time. When Pendo tapped 321 Coffee to send bags of coffee to its 500 employees, Reeg realized 321 needed to have its own roastery, which came to fruition in 2022. Reeg plans to launch tours and tastings at 321 Coffee's upcoming location, where business partners, corporate groups, and others can learn about roasting and accessibility enhancements. I think that's just an important lesson for everyone in the business community, she said. After acquisition, UBS vacates building in RTP. Credit Suisse sale to UBS means the company needs less space. And this article is written by Lauren Onasorge and Kaylee Thompson. More than 2 years after UBS agreed to acquire Credit Suisse, the global banking giant is now looking to sublease a prominent building in Research Triangle Park. The downsizing move isn't entirely unexpected, as the rapid growth Credit Suisse once envisioned in the triangle has slowed under UBS. Sources close to the situation described it as a consolidation and said UBS has no plan to leave RTP. The building now up for sublease is 7033 Lewis Stevens Drive. It spans more than 210,000 square feet. The plan is for UBS to keep using the second newer building on the campus. That building, 6933 Lewis Stevens Drive, is 205,000 square feet. The two-building campus covers 63 acres and prior to the UBS acquisition employed more than 2,300 people, making it one of the region's largest employers. But following the deal, that number had dropped to 1,700 as of last year, according to a disclosure UBS sent to state officials. UBS declined to comment on the current headcount or its plan for RTP. The listing adds to the enormous amount of sublease space on the market in the Triangle, more than 3 million square feet as of the second quarter, according to a report by Savills. For years, Credit Suisse was a local growth story, so influential that it was credited as one of the reasons North Carolina backed off of the controversial House Bill 2. But last year, UBS canceled Credit Suisse's $40 million incentives agreement with the state after failing to meet hiring milestones tied to the 2017 expansion plan. The four-story building was renovated in 2020 and includes a fitness center with showers, on-site cafe, amenity lounge, and outdoor patio with seating. The office space has open workstations, private offices, conference rooms, phone booths, and dedicated quiet zones. Duke Health gains approval for MRI center in Mebane. This is by Anna Blumenthal. Duke Health has received approval for a nearly $7.4 million MRI facility in Mebane, where it owns about 15 acres next to the site of a retail residential complex planned by Greensboro's Quarry Group. Duke Health applied in February for the MRI, describing the project as acquiring a fixed MRI scanner pursuant to the 2025 State Medical Facilities Plan need determination, according to documents with the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services. Construction for the project is expected to begin in December of this year, with an expected completion in July 2026. The scanner would be located at a diagnostic center called Duke Imaging Mebane, according to the application log. There is no address associated with the application. Duke Health operates a primary care facility on Mebane Oaks Road in Mebane and provides primary, pediatric, and internal medicine services care at the Clinic. Less than a mile away. That's K-E-R-N-O-D-L-E. Duke Health, in a recently formed partnership with Novant Health, is currently vying with Cone Health to build a 46-bed, $200 million hospital in Mebane. And finally, developer eyes Cary land for new community. This is written by Kaylee Thompson. A new community could rise near the SAS campus in Cary, as a Raleigh developer has targeted the land with a rezoning proposal. Heritage Capital Partners filed a rezoning application with the town of Cary to allow for up to 175 dwelling units on 22 acres along Trenton Road, south of Interstate 40. The proposal is to go from office and institutional district zoning to residential multifamily. The residences would be at least two types of housing, including multifamily, townhomes, patio homes, or duplexes. One of the conditions offered is that only 40% of the units are allowed to be in buildings with more than 5 units in them. That would limit the number of apartments in the project. Heritage Capital Partners did not provide a comment on the rezoning. Its website shows the location as a low-density residential development. The company's other projects include the Alston Yards Apartments in Cary. The application shows the developer is aiming to provide housing for millennials who are looking to move from apartments to attached single-family homes, along with housing for seniors. The location is desirable for many users, ranging from an empty nester who loves nature, i.e. proximity to Umstead Park, to an employee of SAS who wants to walk to work, the application says. The property is situated at 101 Roscoe Trail and is owned by the state of North Carolina. It's mostly forested and is assessed at $7.54 million. Proximity to the SAS campus has drawn other developments like restaurant Nana Morrison's Soul Food, a larger office for Bobbitt Construction, and another rezoning in the works for 100 apartments near the Harrison Square Retail Center. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to A Better World. And the articles on this page begin with Methodist Home names new leader Ben Williams to take over a longtime organization that supports children. A Raleigh organization with a long history of helping children in need and substantial community support has a new leader. The Methodist Home for Children has named the Reverend Ben Williams as its new CEO. He started August 1st. Williams, who grew up in Wilson, graduated from Wake Forest University with a degree in business and then went to the Divinity School at Duke University. He served as a pastor in Chapel Hill and Raleigh. I have a deep respect and love for everything Methodist Home for Children has been for the 125-plus years, Williams said, according to the organization's website, and I'm ready to bring my passion, expertise, and unwavering dedication to this role, ensuring that every child and family served finds hope, stability, and a pathway to God's preferred future. Williams replaces the Reverend Bruce Stanley, who retired after dramatically expanding the program. The organization began as a traditional orphanage in 1899 and now includes a wide variety of programs with a budget that exceeds $27 million. The organization has a number of events to gather public support, including the upcoming Dream Big event in Raleigh on January 24. Durham events aim to give local profits, nonprofits a lift. Nonprofits in the Triangle will be highlighted October 8 when the Duke University Office of Durham and Community Affairs and the Triangle Nonprofit and Volunteer Leadership Center host a volunteer fair from 3 p.m. until 6 p.m. The event in Penn Garden will look to support nonprofits based in Durham, Wake, and/or Orange counties. The focus areas are education, nutrition, community partnerships, economic mobility, and housing. Maple Court provides support for veterans. Maple Court, which provides housing for Durham area veterans facing homelessness, substance abuse, and mental health issues, held an event August 29 to spotlight how veterans can get help. Since 2009, Maple Court has provided support to nearly 600 veterans. One current resident is Philip Albertson, a 65-year-old Navy veteran who struggled with substance abuse after getting hooked after using medications to manage pain. Maple Court supports about 45 veterans each year. It receives funding from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development and Durham County Veteran Services. Food Lion Push supports college students. More than 30 colleges across the region are participating in the Food Lion Feeds program to address food insecurity among students. Since its launch in 2019, SAC to Give Back has contributed more than 3.8 million meals to colleges, college and community pantries. Food Lion Feeds will donate the equivalent of 1,000 meals, up to 30,000 meals per school, for every quarterback sack made by each participating school. Participating in the program are NC State University, UNC Chapel Hill, Shaw University, Elon University, and East Carolina University, among others. When college students struggle to afford healthy meals, it can have a significant impact on their academic performance, said Kevin Durkee, who manages the program for Food Lion. SAC to Give Back gets football teams and fans involved in a unique way to help reduce food insecurity on their respective campuses, giving all students an opportunity to succeed. And finally, Diaper Train looks to help Wake families. The Diaper Train, the only diaper bank that focuses solely on Wake County, will hold its annual fundraiser September 19. The Diaper Train was formerly located on Tucker Street in Glenwood South, but is now based at 1812 Tillery Place. The 7 p.m. event at its new home will include barbecue, music, and more. The organization distributed 878,000 diapers in 2024, especially considering that diapers generally are not covered by federal programs such as SNAP, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, and WIC, and can be costly for families. And now we turn to the reporter pages in the Triangle Business Journal, beginning with Kaylee Thompson's page, Real Estate and Development. Mansion once raided by FBI sold. The home's former owners were indicted in a murder-for-hire plot. The 16,856-square-foot Raleigh mansion that was raided by the feds in 2018 finally has a new owner. Situated within the Northridge Country Club community, the home at 6510 New Market Way sold for $4.4 million in July, according to Wake County deed records. The estate was originally listed in 2023 for $10 million, at the time one of the most expensive listings in the city, but was taken off the market in January before being relisted for $5.75 $5 million in May. The home has an assessed value of $7.8 million, according to property records. Wake County records show the initial deed for the sale listed the buyer as the Magnolia Hill Revocable Trust, which lists Michael Ricapine, CEO of Ricapine Associates Family Dentistry, as trustee. But an affidavit filed shortly after the sale says the listed grantee was made in error and that the buyer was the Magnolia Holdings Trust. There are no trustees filed in association with Magnolia Holdings Trust. Ricapine declined to comment for this story when reached by TVJ. The estate was sold by Tatiana Teff, who had the property deeded to her in July 2021 by her ex-husband, Leonid Teff. The couple bought the home for $4.2 million in 2012. In 2018, the couple was indicted on charges including money laundering, immigration fraud, and a murder-for-hire plot. Leonid Teff was deported as part of his sentencing, while Tatiana was allowed to remain in the U.S. The large home sits on 1.84 acres overlooking the 18th hole of the Oaks course at Northridge Country Club. It has 7 bedrooms, 13 bathrooms, and a 4-car garage. The spacious home has grand hall with curving staircases, a daily use kitchen, catering kitchen, a massage room, workout studio, wine storage room, and 2 laundry rooms. Durham approves 300-acre project. Southeast Durham is getting even hotter as a zoning change paves the way for a 300-acre mixed-use development. The Durham City Council has approved a zoning map change for property along Highway 70 on the edge of Durham County and Briar Creek. The new zoning will allow Beacon Partners and HM Partners to develop up to 1,750 residential units and up to 1.28 million square feet of industrial and commercial space, including the option for retail and restaurant space, according to a development plan. The new zoning for the 14 parcels is planned development residential and industrial light. The previous zoning was residential rural, industrial light, commercial general, and residential 4. 4 of the parcels were in Wake County, while the others were in Durham. All were annexed into the city of Durham. A new road will cut the 300-acre site almost in half, making the western portion the industrial light zoning and the eastern portion planned development residential. According to a traffic analysis by engineering firm Kimberly Horn, the industrial light side will be 142 acres and have a 630,000-square-foot industrial park and 650,000 square feet of warehousing space, while the residential component will be 166 acres with 500 single-family attached units and 1,250 multifamily units. In Durham, townhomes to squeeze into 7-acre site. A property in North Durham is being eyed for a residential development that could have 10 units per acre. A zoning map change filed with the city of Durham would make way for higher density, allowing for a maximum of 70 townhomes to be built on 6.98 acres near the North Duke Shopping Center. No developer was listed on the rezoning application. The site at 4424 Denfield Street, east of Highway 501, has a brick single-family home on it that dates to the 1940s. The application states the home would be kept, counting as one of the 70 units, and the townhomes would be nestled behind it. Conditions offered in the application include keeping the single-family home for at least 5 years, setting aside 5% of the units as affordable housing for 30 years, placing an EV charging station at each unit, and constructing a 10-foot-wide shared path along Denfield Street for the frontage of the site. And finally, Boston PE firm snags building for nearly $25 million. A Boston real estate firm is expanding its Carolinas presence with its first acquisition in the Triangle. Private equity firm Rockpoint purchased a flex manufacturing building in Durham near the IBM campus for $24.55 million, according to Durham County deed records. Allidade Capital of Michigan sold the One Park Center building at 4018 Patriot Drive to Rockpoint. After owning it for 4 years, it paid $16.75 million for the property in 2021. The light manufacturing building has 102,700 square feet of space and is 100% leased, according to LoopNet. FST Technical Services of Phoenix took the remaining 4,848 square feet in January for its second North Carolina location. And now we turn to Kate Tracy's page on retail and restaurants. Massive pickleball venue planned in North Raleigh. Warehouse owner looks for a rezoning to create pickleball paradise. Christopher Mitscherlich, that's M-I-T-S-C-H-E-R-L-I-C-H, is ready to go all in on pickleball in North Raleigh. Mitscherlich owns a warehouse on 7.81 acres at 2806 Gresham Lake Road near Interstate 540. He's seeking a rezoning with the city of Raleigh to allow for dozens of pickleball courts plus food and retail space. We're in a perfect location. I think it's the heart of North Raleigh, he said. The property is currently zoned heavy industrial with a special highway overlay district. Mitscherlich is seeking a rezoning to allow industrial mixed use with a maximum of 5 stories. He's hired the law firm Nichols & Crampton, PA, to assist with the process. He purchased the property in 2014 for $1.85 million, according to deed records. Mitscherlich operates the underground at the property, which includes 2 pickleball courts and a recovery cave with a sauna and cold plunge. He said the courts have become so popular that even he can't find open court time now. Most states and major cities are ramping up. I think we're a little slow in Raleigh, he said, of pickleball in the area. Other indoor pickleball venues in the area include Pickles and Play and Pinpoint. Mitscherlich is proposing a new 3-story, 160,000-square-foot building that will have 4 sand volleyball courts, 4 badminton courts, and 38 pickleball courts. Mitscherlich also plans to have a bar serving alcoholic beverages indoors. Mitscherlich thinks Raleigh does not have enough pickleball courts to meet the demand for the sport. Raleigh has a need for that many courts, and it has a need for a place to hold a tournament, he said. The project's budget is $15 million, funded partially through private investors. Pending zoning and permit approvals, Mitscherlich is planning to open the facility by the end of 2026. The venue's plans include the possibility of turning the 3rd floor into a championship court with stadium seating. Mitscherlich said he is seeing younger kids playing the sport as well as greater interest in professional pickleball. It's just growing and growing and growing, he said. Sushi spot to replace Red Lobster in Cary. A former Red Lobster in Cary is relaunching as a sushi restaurant, the latest in a string of new eateries taking over shuttered chain restaurants in the Triangle. Umi Sushi is poised to take over the space at 1801 Walnut Street, according to town records. The site is next to Olive Garden and Chick-fil-A near the busy Crossroads Plaza shopping center. Hugo Gao is listed on documents as the owner of Umi Sushi. An LLC listing the address of San Diego-based Realty Income owns the 9,195-square-foot restaurant. The building sits on 2.36 acres and has a total assessed value of $3.17 million. Plans submitted to the town indicate an initial construction project to demo the interior walls prior to a future build-out. The cost of the demolition is $35,000. Wake Forest adds new indoor venue for golf. The Swing Bays, an indoor golf franchise based in Colorado, has landed its first out-of-state location in Wake Forest. For Phil and Nancy Gugliotta, the local Swing Bays franchisees, it's the first of multiple locations they intend to open. Located at 3615 Rogers Branch Road in a 5,000-square-foot building, Phil Gugliotta plans to open the venue by May. I've been in Raleigh for 18 years, and we've just seen it grow to crazy numbers, and we actually own some office space on Rogers Road, so we've seen the growth there as well, he said. And finally, growing gun shop to expand to larger facility. Longtime Raleigh gun shop Carolina Gun Runners has pulled the trigger on a new location in Wake Forest. Jim McComas, president at Carolina Gun Runners, is nearly doubling the size of his store by moving to 1209 South Main Street in Wake Forest. The store, located along South Main Street near the Highway 98 intersection, plans to open at the beginning of next year. The shop has outgrown its 2,800-square-foot space at 1141 Falls River Avenue in the Falls River Town Center. We just ran out of space, McComa said. And now we turn to Ben Tobin's page, Greater Triangle. Target eyes opening its first store in Sanford. A $64 million development proposal calls for a Target store. Sanford residents and developers alike have been pushing for more retail to come to the Lee County town. They may soon get a big one. Casto, a real estate firm based in Columbus, Ohio, is planning to bring Sanford its first Target store as part of a proposal to redevelop the River Birch Shopping Center at 1033 Spring Lane, according to a public notice. On September 16, the Sanford City Council is scheduled to discuss providing $4 million worth of incentives to the project, which consists of roughly $64 million investment per Casto. According to a public notice from the city, Casto is proposing to redevelop the property and to deliver a Target and at least 62,000 square feet of retail space, including a new to market grocery store acceptable to Target. This potential redevelopment partnership reflects the kind of strategic investment Sanford has been preparing for, an opportunity to remove blight, attract premium retail, and strengthen our tax base, Sanford Mayor Rebecca Wyoff-Salmon said. If approved, working with Casco to bring Target and a new grocery store to River Birch continues to position our city for long-term economic vitality, she said. The city says Target could open as soon as 2027. The redevelopment of the River Birch Shopping Center, once a thriving retail hub for Sanford, has been discussed for years. In November 2022, Casto purchased the 35-acre shopping center for $10 million. The following year, Casto submitted plans to the Sanford-Lee County Broadway Technical Review Committee that included demolition and replacement of most structures to include retail, offices, and multifamily. Casto's new plans only contain the commercial component. The Target store and the River Birch Shopping Center redevelopment could be massive for Sanford, which has nearly 33,000 residents, and Lee County, where the population has climbed to around 70,000. Sanford has a strong manufacturing base, but the county's retail sector is relatively weak compared to neighboring Moore and Harnett counties. Jimmy Randolph, president and CEO of the public-private Sanford Area Growth Alliance, said that Lee County is losing upwards of $70 million in leakage or purchases made by Lee County residents in surrounding counties. Clayton facility sells for nearly $3.3 million. A Michigan firm has scooped up a commercial property in Clayton for millions of dollars. A former kinder care facility at 204 Cunningham Lane in Clayton sold for $3.27 million last month, according to deed records. The buyer is an LLC addressed to EIG14T Commercial Real Estate in Berkeley, Michigan. That's according to North Carolina Secretary of State filings, which list the company's CEO, Reed Fenton, as an official for the LLC. The seller is an LLC tied to the Fred Smith Company, a large property owner in Johnston County. The building is 14,308 square feet and sits on 1.23 acres, according to property records. EIG14T Commercial Real Estate was founded in 2014 and specializes in properties used for education, health, and wellness. And that EIG14T can be said as 8. 300 acres flagged for homes in Greenville. As Greenville continues to ride the wave of East Carolina University and manufacturing growth, residential developers and home builders are looking to get in on the action. The latest example of this is a more than $9 million sale for 332 acres off Opal Lane and Hunt Club Lane, west of downtown Greenville. Mad M&R, a Whitsitt-based LLC that includes Ray Covington and Mark Lukowski, two developers who are active in the Triangle region, spent around $9.2 million to acquire the land last month, according to Pitt County deed records. And finally, Graystar faces hurdles with industrial project. The future of an industrial project in Johnston County remains uncertain. Real estate giant Graystar submitted an application in June to rezone 12.56 acres off Pierce and Cleveland Roads to pave the way for a 136,080 square foot industrial building. The land is owned by G. Paul Sherrill Jr. and has a market value of $428,000, according to property records. But the Johnston County Planning Board unanimously recommended the project be denied. The project will now be heard by the Board of Commissioners in October. And now we turn to Lauren Onosorge's page, Echo, Devo, and Technology. Jobs pipeline for North Carolina now at 71,000. Expanding companies continue to zero in on North Carolina, but office and R&D projects appear to be taking a break. The latest figures from the Economic Development Partnership of North Carolina show a pipeline of 245 projects. That pipeline, which consists of companies considering the state for relocations or expansions, represents the potential for nearly 71,000 new jobs and more than $59 billion in new investment, on track with figures released last month. But of the 30 new projects the statewide recruitment team opened in August, none involved office or R&D functions, a departure from the last several months. Matt Gladick, vice president of the Greater Durham Chamber of Commerce, describes Durham's pipeline as stable at about 5,000 jobs spread across 20 active projects, primarily in life sciences. In Wake County, economic developers are eyeing a 40-project portfolio, with those concentrated primarily in life sciences and advanced manufacturing. But we are seeing more segmented diversity within life sciences and biopharma, Michael Haley, executive director for Wake County Economic Development, said in an email. And unlike the state as a whole, Wake County is seeing office and R&D interest. Duke now looks to make a quantum leap. A $4 million grant could supercharge the Triangle's momentum in quantum computing. The funding from the National Science Foundation will support the design phase of a quantum computer capable of tackling scientific questions the tech industry hasn't yet imagined. Ken Brown, the Duke University professor leading the research group developing the 256-qubit trapped ion quantum computer, said quantum computing is still in its early days. Think of artificial intelligence, he said, which seems like it just appeared but was actually around for a long time. He sees quantum computing, which has had less time to mature, eventually having its own breakthrough moment. The project, called QACTI, or Quantum Advantage Class Trapped Ion System, began with a $1 million pilot NSF grant. Researchers held town halls to gather input from academia and industry on potential applications. Wolfspeed's bankruptcy plan confirmed. Nearly 3 months after filing for bankruptcy to alleviate billions in debt, chipmaker Wolfspeed had its reorganization plan confirmed September 8, and a judge approved its emergency motion to sell millions of dollars in shares. Company executives were not made available to comment, but the Durham-based manufacturer said in a news release that it expects to emerge from its bankruptcy in the next several weeks. Previously, the company had said it hoped to emerge by the end of September. Alexander Welch, an attorney with Latham & Watkins, LLP, representing Wolfspeed, told the court that this month is still the plan. The company will move forward as a stronger going concern, Welch said. And finally, North Hills adds California firm Sysdig, a cybersecurity company, snags space in the Main District. A San Francisco cybersecurity unicorn has planted its East Coast headquarters in Raleigh's North Hills with plans to grow. Sysdig, whose Triangle footprint began 7 years ago with just three remote workers, today it has 30 people and its CEO, William Welch, based in the Triangle. It is relocating from an office in Cary to a space at 4000 Center at North Hills, part of Kane Realty's remake of the North Hills Main District. At 4,600 square feet, the new office has room for the company to grow its local headcount, said Tarek Azari, the firm's Raleigh-based vice president of legal. The local offices house a cross-functional team with product support, customer success, engineering, HR, and marketing all represented. And we'll go ahead and stop there as the rest of the article discusses the process of selecting a location. And our final reporter page is Zach Ezone's page, Life Sciences and Higher Ed. ECU targets cuts amid enrollment pressures. University looks to cut $25 million from budget as numbers dip. East Carolina has become the latest university in the region to cut costs amid various headwinds. The Greenville University plans to cut $25 million from its budget over the next 3 years in response to broader enrollment trends. Other schools in the Triangle are slashing expenses as well for various reasons, such as decreases in federal funding or enrollment declines. ECU plans to identify $25 million, about 2% of the university's total budget, in cost savings and efficiencies. Chancellor Philip Rogers announced September 4. The university plans to save about $5 million in fiscal year 2025 to 26, of which $4.2 million has already been identified. The university's budgeted total revenue for fiscal year 2025 was $1.12 billion. State appropriations were budgeted for the largest share at 31% of total revenue, followed by patient services, ECU health at 25%, and student tuition and fees at 20%. These cuts will include permanent reductions and organizational adjustments, Rogers said. The university will continue reviewing all academic programs, part of an effort that began in spring 2024. ECU plans to direct existing resources to high-demand programs such as its College of Nursing. The university is also growing its online programs to diversify its enrollment portfolio, Rogers said. We must adapt and innovate. We have a strong foundation at ECU, and we will build on our commitment. ECU in fall 2024 had total enrollment, including undergraduate and graduate, of 26,940 students, according to University of North Carolina system data. This was up slightly from fall 2023's enrollment of 26,785. However, the university's enrollment has trended down over most of the past decade after reaching 29,131 in 2017. UNC Chapel Hill and Duke University are also cutting costs, although for different reasons. UNC is cutting $70 million in expenses to cover potential losses in state funding and federal research dollars. Meanwhile, Duke is trimming its workforce and cutting costs amid a loss of federal research funding. And next, a legal battle. St. Aug's accreditation fight intensifies with agency. The accrediting agency for St. Augustine's University, said the Raleigh College hasn't done enough to show it should keep its accreditation. The university in August filed a lawsuit claiming the Southern Association of Colleges and Schools Commission on Colleges, or SACSCOC, acted arbitrarily, unreasonably, and unlawfully in its decision to remove the school from its membership. A judge ordered the accreditor to reinstate the university's membership, preserving its ability to participate in federal student aid programs as the lawsuit moves forward. St. Augustine's claims that it presented new and verifiable evidence during an accreditation appeal that demonstrated its efforts to address the accreditor's concerns. However, in a court filing September 8, SACSCOC claimed the university failed to present new and verifiable financial information material to the adverse decision of the SACSCOC Board of Trustees. St. Augustine's has faced challenges related to its accreditation for years. SACSCOC removed the school from its membership in 2023. The school lost an appeal but prevailed in the arbitration process. And we'll go ahead and stop there as we've reached the end of our time. Today's program, though, is underwritten by Highwoods Properties with its headquarters in Raleigh, North Carolina. Highwoods, a real estate investment trust, is committed to making our communities better places to live and work. Highwoods can be reached at 866-449-6637. And we have run out of time for today's episode of Triangle Business Journal. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. Again, I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. And if you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.